Hey, this is Mandy and Kim with NextHop, where we are passionate about keeping kids safe in the digital world.
Did you know we have tens of thousands of listeners in 60 countries? It's truly amazing.
Crazy. Only God.
And as a nonprofit, everything we do at NextHop is supported by people just like you.
Be a part of changing the culture of conversation in your home and around the globe by making a donation today.
Go to NextHop.org and click on Give and check out our resources while you're there.
More than cyber parenting. Conversations to connect. Hi, guys. It's Mandy. Kim is not here today. Man, she's sick and her voice sounds awful. So y'all pray for her. Pray for her to feel better. We are joined today by a very, very special guest. His name is Jim Musser. Jim and I met at a conference a couple years ago in Florida. We were speaking at this conference. And I had like an hour before I was going to get to the airport. And there was one session that I wanted to go to, and it was his because it was all about college prep. And he was a college minister with years of experience. And I was doing all in the middle of doing all this research with my kid. And I'm like, I need this guy's information. So I walked in and I was like a sponge. Jim, welcome to the show. I want you to kind of tell us about yourself and your ministry, like what you've been up to.
Well, thank you, Mandy. It's good to be with you. And started in 1983, which ages me quite a bit. I grew up in a church-going home, but not a Christian home. When I went to college, I was basically, as a freshman, just wanting to do what most college students do, went to the parties, and I never liked drinking, but I wanted to do the party scene because I wanted to make friends. I just didn't like it. And so I started to kind of look for different things. I had a freshman residential assistant or RA. I met a number of Christians in my dorm, and they began inviting me to campus ministry events. Long story short, within about 3 months, God had just prepared my heart, and I was at a Bible study and taking communion, and I was just saw the love in among these students. And I told Jesus, I said, Lord, if this is what you are about, then this is what I want to be about. And so I invited Jesus into my life and began to follow him. And so I was a student leader in a campus ministry at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, where I went to school, got a degree in social work, went on to seminary. It's now called Emmanuel Christian Seminary at Milligan College, which is in Johnson City, Tennessee. I was hired by a campus minister at the University of Kansas, spent 21 years there. And then I felt like it was God's timing that I leave there. And the ministry invited me to come at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina, up in the Appalachian Mountains, and have been here ever since. And just recently became campus minister emeritus, basically means I'm old, and that I'm basically stepping out of the on-campus ministry and doing more fundraising for the year. And then I'm also starting a new ministry called Upstream Ministries, which is really where my book comes in, to do consulting work with churches, with parents groups about raising their kids spiritually. That's kind of where I am. Married to my wife Mariana. We've been married since 2005, and she's from South Africa.
I feel like our listeners can just soak in your wisdom today. I mean, there's so much here. There's so many things that you said sharing your story that I loved. One was you said you grew up in a church-going home, but not a Christian home. Tell me what you mean by that. What would be your distinction there? Because I think that is amazing how you said that.
Well, the distinction is that in our culture, it's getting less and less now. But when I grew up, in the 50s and 60s, it was very culturally appropriate to go to church. Most decent people would be a part of a church. My parents belonged to a Methodist church. But at home, there was no Bible reading. There was no praying. You know, in reality, my parents didn't have a good marriage. They argued a lot. My mom gossiped a lot, and nobody talked about Jesus. Nobody talked about loving one another, really. And so I didn't have much exposure to the Christian faith other than what I got in confirmation and, you know, through the Methodist Church and that. And it was just kind of a list of things, and you just did them because that's what age you were. So when I left for college, I think I was, my heart was open. I was really searching, but I didn't know that Jesus was the answer. I was just looking for something. I think I thought a girlfriend was an answer, probably. Yeah, so that's the distinction, is that, yeah, you have the appearance of being Christian. You may be, you know, good people, moral people. You go to church, but in reality, you don't know really what it means to follow Jesus and have him as your Lord.
I think a lot of people fall into that category. I hate to say it, but I do, that we have the label, but we're not really walking the talk behind closed doors or pouring and discipling into our kids the way Jesus has called us to. We're just checking off check boxes, go to church, send them to youth group, that kind of thing. I also just absolutely adore the fact that you were saved in campus ministry and then God called you to it. Because how like God, right?
Yeah.
How like God to use you in the space where you have been just changed and impacted and your eyes were opened. I want to talk really about your book because it's just released January 18th, 2022, right, on the market, finally.
That's right.
A labor of love, I know.
Yeah, it is.
I want you to tell me about the structure of your book because I love how you laid it out and the story that you told in it. So if you could just give a summary for our listeners.
Well, the title is Letters from Downstream. That's the main title. That comes from when you look at a river, you can tell the quality of the water upstream by what you see downstream. And so as a river flows, it picks up a lot of different things, some good things, some often a lot of bad things, contaminants of all kinds. And so in my book, I tell a story about a EPA cleanup project out in the West. Something goes terribly wrong and just leaks all this contaminant into the river, and the people wake up and the river is like a putrid green. What I say is, okay, they knew something was wrong upstream because of what they saw downstream. That's what I'm trying to say to my audience, is that you may think that things are great in the church and your kids are going, you know, going on into adulthood and they're great because they've been, you know, we're Christians. We raised them as Christians. They were in all, you know, the church programs and it's great. But I have a very unique view being what I call downstream at the university campus. And I've been there for 38 years and I've seen a consistent reality that when Christian kids show up or Christians identifying as Christians show up as freshmen, that they aren't really very mature, if they're Christian at all. Most of them don't have any idea what it means to follow Jesus. They have a very scant knowledge of the scriptures. Some of them don't even, particularly now with Bible apps, they don't even know how to find books of the scriptures other than typing in on their phone the name of the book. They wouldn't know what order they came in or anything. Kids aren't comfortable with praying out loud. We get that a lot. They don't have a missional vision for ministry. So I'm trying to let churches know and parents know things aren't good upstream because of what I see downstream, and we need to change the upstream waters that are flowing. And so that's how the book is laid out, and it's laid out in with letters. The first four chapters deal with the problems of the water upstream, the spiritual waters. And then the remaining book, the remaining eight chapters, deal with finding the solutions, how to clean up the spiritual waters in our churches, in our homes.
And I love that because you have such a unique perspective. You know, I envision me dropping my kid off at college in a couple months, right? In the fall this year. And you get a perspective of her and her faith walk that I may not see. Mm-hmm. Because you see her in a new environment with no real circle of friends yet, influences, right? And you see the decision she's making versus what I see. And I'm just thinking, well, we've been in church our whole life and we pray at home and we read the Bible at home. But, you know, what does her faith really look like in the real world? And you get to see that.
Right.
As I read through your book, Jim, one of the things that I kept thinking in my mind was, this is kind of a difficult book to read. And I say that because this is hard to hear. It's hard to hear that our kids are struggling with their faith once they get to college, because it feels like we're not doing the right things, which we're not. We need to tweak some things, right? But it's a challenging book to read, because one of the things we say at Next Talk and one of the chapters in my book is you have to look in the mirror. You have to see what you're doing wrong as a parent and fix it. But one of the things that you pointed out in your book is you're saying, this is all the things that I'm seeing. These kids are struggling. Even if they come from a great Christian family, I'm seeing them struggle at college. And then you're drawing on your personal experience and you're sharing that in your book. But then you bring in a statistic. And to me, it just was that finished the picture for me, because you brought in the research and the science to match what your perception was. Can you share that stat with us?
Well, a man that called J. Warner Wallace, who has a website called Cold Case Christianity. And I was looking on that website during researching the book. And he goes into great detail on all the research that he's looked at. And it's very broad. But the conclusion is that young people's faith is not nearly as good as we think it is. And some studies said as many as 80% leave the faith while they're in college. Now, it may be temporary, but it's that they basically walk away for a time, and still many don't come back. And that's my thing too, because it's what my observations are, that these students don't really have a very solid faith to come in. And often what we, I think, as parents are afraid of, and churches, talk about this a lot, some of the evils of the university and how they're going to be led astray and all that. But I look at it deeper, because I went to a secular university and I found Jesus, and Jesus is there. He's everywhere. The problem is that many of these young people are not prepared spiritually for the challenges of the university. And thus the challenges of the world, and you can't protect them forever. And if you think of the New Testament, there were all kinds of idolatries going on, sexual perversions, and the church thrived in the midst of that. And so, I'm looking at, okay, what's going on here? And what I see is really that the church made a decision decades ago to grow. And the way they would grow was to create programs that would benefit and attract families. And so you got children's ministries and youth ministries, and they put the emphasis on that. And so what happens, and I think it's unintentional, but the parents see that and they, great, and I love these programs and I want my kids to be involved in them. The problem is that the biblical responsibility of raising kids spiritually is the parents' responsibility. It's not the local church. The local church, in my opinion, and I think biblically it backed up by it, is to disciple the adults so that they know how to disciple their kids. And what we've done is skip that step, and we just go in and we try to teach the kids through the programs. But like my upbringing, I was watching my parents. That's who I was watching. The church taught me a lot of things, you know, correct doctrine and all of this stuff. But it really didn't matter much because my parents didn't reflect it. That's who I was watching and basing my beliefs, my behavior on. And so in my book, that's what I'm really emphasizing to both the church and the parents. It's like, okay, the parents need to be equipped to do this. They need to be of the spiritual maturity to be able to do it. And the church needs to come alongside of them to do it. And I think we've just got it wrong.
Well, I definitely think there's room for improvement. And I also think we fall into this pit sometimes that it's an either or situation. Like it's right. Either the parents' responsibility or the church's. And instead of a team effort, you know, right. Parents discipling kids, churches coming alongside and discipling parents and kids, and, you know, working as a team instead of, I think you make a really good point. I think sometimes as parents, we get so busy in our careers or whatever, and the church is offering all these fun, great things. And so it's like we just drop them off and then we don't try and live it at home or supplement or lead in that way. We take our hands off the wheel.
Right.
And it reminds me of like app monitoring devices. That's what we do with that too. We get social media and we pay $9.99 a month. And then we're like, okay, I don't need to talk to them about anything they're seeing online. Mm-hmm. And that's so raw. That's a tool. Yes, take them to youth group. Yes, use the app monitoring service. But we have to do our job too. We can't check out here because we're doing all the other things as well. And I think your book does a really good job of that, of saying, local church, how can we change a little bit? And parents, how can you change a little bit to make sure that these kids walk on to these college campuses or just into the world, wherever they're going next, mm-hmm. prepared for it?
Right. You know, Deuteronomy 6:6-7, and also in Deuteronomy 11, talks about talking to your kids about the Lord. And not talking at them, but talking, I think talking with them is the assumption. And I think that's the thing to witness to your children, what your faith is by talking with them about it and living it out. I think those two things are the most crucial in raising kids spiritually. They need to hear your faith and they need to see your faith. Parents just get too busy and they forget that and they get caught up in all kinds of things. And I point out in the book that, you know, we all have the same amount of time and that involves, and it's finite, and that involves choices. And so we have to begin making choices of what is best spiritually for our kids rather than just going with the culture and whatever they think, you know, the culture thinks is important.
Well, and Deuteronomy 6 is one of our favorite verses around here. I mean, it's the verse I read when I realized that's the solution God was giving me to keeping kids safe online, you know, was it wasn't about controlling them, bubble wrapping them, setting a whole bunch of rules. I mean, all of that stuff, yes, they need guidelines for sure. You know, God was saying to me, yeah, do the guidelines. Yeah, delay the phone. But the key here, Mandy, is that you have to get in there and talk about all the things happening in the culture, get them ready for it. And I loved what you said, like, they need to see us trying to figure out the culture and how to live and work in the world by faith. Right. And as they see us struggle with that. I mean, it's a struggle. Let's be honest. It is a struggle to do that. As they see us struggle with that and we're talking it out, we're building character there that we don't even realize. And I think that's what we miss a lot because we're just saying rules and controlling and all that. And that doesn't work. That's not working. Yep,
that is very true.
I want to switch gears here for just a second. One of the practical examples you gave. So for our listeners here that are like, oh my gosh, there's probably a lot of things that I can change. I mean, I know since I have attended your session and read your book, I'm asking myself the tough questions. This is hard work. And I'm making sure, you know, are my kids really grounded when they walk out of my home and into this world? Are they ready to face what's out there? One of the things, you gave such great practical tips in your session. Can you give us just a couple that we can prepare them for in their faith when they leave our home?
Well, I think, and this is the purpose of that session. My book is really talking about let's start from the beginning and, you know, raise them in the way that will really produce a solid foundation for them. But, you know, like you said, when you read the book, you realize, oh, I've fallen short in a lot of ways, and God's grace is in that. And there's still a lot of things you can do to prepare them. One of the things that parents often get caught up in, and you know, scholarships and housing and all those things, and they relegate to the end of the line, if it's even thought about at all, is the spiritual resources at the schools that they're looking at. And so I really advise both like youth pastors, but also parents to really begin to engage early on and get them exposed to Christians already at college, like having visiting campus ministries or having campus ministry groups come into the youth group so that kids can see that there are Christians on campus. A lot of times their views of college life are formed by movies and TV shows that they see, which are totally not necessarily reality and definitely don't show a godly side of things. And so that's one thing, is exposing them, but finding when you're narrowing down the colleges that your child may be interested in, find out what the spiritual resources are and investigate those. Get your child involved in that. We talked about that. They need to have ownership of this, because so many times, and I share a story in the book, when my early days at University of Kansas, we were in the union presenting our ministry along with other ministries and groups. And this woman, I see her from across the way, literally grabbing her daughter by the arm and dragging her over to the table and saying, "My daughter is interested in your ministry." And I could see on her face, she was mortified and she had no interest in the faith. But a lot of times that's what parents do. They wait till the last minute, like summer orientation, and then they're scrambling, trying to find, you know, out information. And then they overwhelm their kids with brochures and flyers and business cards. And the kids are already overwhelmed enough, and they likely won't even look at it. And I refer to that as kind of the Hail Mary pass. You know, it may work, possibly, but a better strategy is to have a plan. I would really encourage parents to engage their kids in what's available spiritually on campus and get them involved, have them do searches on any university website. They have clubs and organizations. You can find campus ministries on there. Sometimes you can find churches depending on the university. And then when you're visiting, arrange for them to meet with some campus ministers. And most campus ministers are wise enough to know that they should bring along students, which is what I did, you know, numerous times. If I would get calls, "Hey, we're interested in the ministry, can you meet with us?" And I would bring a student or two along, because the prospective student not really interested in meeting me. They're interested in making friends. And so that's one of the keys. If they can get connected before they even get to campus with students, Christian students who are already there, that will go a long way to getting them off on the right foot in college, because that's the number one, you know, a lot of parents think, well, the number one thing is, you know, getting your degree and everything. But the number one thing when young 18-year-olds or 19-year-olds start in college, they want to find friends. And that first week or first couple of weeks, that is crucial. And if they find friends that are Christian and following Jesus, that is going to make it so much better. But if they fall in with their roommate or, you know, hallmates, and they're not believers, then it's a tough battle, because they make their friendships there, and that's what they're thinking of.
Well, and I really loved how you reiterated in the session that, you know, even emailing campus ministers to kind of meet when you're doing a campus visit, let your kid do that legwork. Let your kid email. And again, let them have stake in it. And so that helped me so much, you know, because I'm over here like, okay, whenever we look at college visits and we narrow down to like your top three or your top five, the next step then is, what are nearby churches that you may be interested in? What are campus ministries that you may be interested in? I found a great website, and it is called everystudentsent.org. Type in a college campus name, and they'll give you churches, campus ministries, all of that. The other thing is, in your session, and I loved how you pointed out that, you know, they're there, they want to make friends. You shared when you got to college how your roommate was there and he asked you to go. And so you just went because you didn't have any other friends and you wanted friends. And it was parties and drinking and all the things.
Right.
And what I loved about it is how you laid it out. You said, had I already been to campus visits and visited some local campus ministries and new students from that, then I would have had options.
Right.
And so that first week when I would have gotten there, I would have maybe have said, you know, I'm not going to go to that party. I've already got plans with so-and-so over here. Right. But because you didn't have that option, you just went with the flow, and that got you into a bad circle of friends.
Yeah,
am I paraphrasing that right? Because that impacted me. And I remember when I got off the plane, we went and ate Mexican food here in Texas. And I was telling my kids over chips and queso this story, and I was summarizing it for them about how you have to make sure you have people who you know are good, solid Christians at your campus before you step foot there, that we have to do some networking to get those connections made.
Yeah. And it's really fairly simple and straightforward. It's just not done very much to just realize that, yes, finding scholarships and the academic quality of the school and residence halls, all of that's important. But if your kid is going to, you know, walk away from the faith, is all that worth it? And I don't think it is. And so it makes such a difference. I've just seen it over and over again. And I'll share a story I shared in the book is a student that we called Stephen. His parents actually called me and said, hey, we're coming up with Stephen to look at the school for orientation. Can we meet with you? And so I set it up. We got together for lunch, and I brought a student leader along with me. And so we had a great conversation, and Stephen and this student leader, they really got along well. And so then later, the student leader followed up with an email. And then when he hit campus, he got a text and said, hey, we're having something tonight with CCF. Would you like to come? Immediately, he was involved in our ministry and stayed with us throughout his college career. But I'm not convinced that if we hadn't have done that, that he would have been involved with us at all. But it was that connection. And
it matters.
I can't overemphasize that, because I just think that's where 18-year-olds are. It's a scary, even though they may put on, you know, this idea that they're great, they're scared when they first go to campus. And who am I going to meet? Who's going to be my friends? And so they're really wanting that. And because they want it so badly, that's where the enemy can get in and bring along lots of not best, you know, people to be involved with. And so that, I think that's one way of undermining his strategy of introducing them to a lot of bad things, but to help them meet people who are really wanting the righteous things.
You kind of mentioned this in the beginning, but I want to highlight it too. And you also said for churches, you know, you have a role to play too in this practical area where you can be bringing in campus ministers to meet your high school students while they're in your, you know, so make those connections for them, introduce them, give them an avenue to help the kids say, hey, we're on this campus and this campus. So reach out to your local campuses that are near around you is basically what you're saying, and make those connections.
Yeah. A lot of students go to some of the same schools, like in North Carolina, you know, they'll go to App State, or they'll go to North Carolina State or the University of North Carolina, East Carolina. So if most of your students go in state, it's pretty easy to you know, reach out to those different schools of where their ministries are and get them to come in. And campus ministers love to do that because they want to make connections with incoming, you know, prospective students. So,
and again, you're laying out practical things for the church and parents to do. And again, it's working together. It's not an either or that we're placing the blame. It's all of us coming together to work and save these kids and disciple them to a deeper led faith so they can go out and really walk in the world and change it.
Yeah, that's my goal.
Jim, I'm just so proud of you. I love what you're doing. I have learned so much from you. You have challenged me in ways that I needed to be challenged as a parent. And I appreciate that. I really do. So, Jim, tell us where to get your book and where people can contact you.
Well, my book is available on Amazon.com, Letters from Downstream. JimMusser.com is my website.
There's one more thing that I want to say before we wrap up, and that's this. If your kid is already in college or already moved out or it's late in the game and you're like, oh my goodness, I've missed some things. I want to just leave it here with a lot of hope. There is never, never something that God can't fix. And we saw this with Jim. You know, he was very honest and said, we were a church going family, but I didn't see it at home. But God still was working through all of it and reached Jim's heart. And so even though, yes, we need to look in the mirror and say, okay, what can we do differently here? If you've missed it and you're just grieving over it right now, I just want to give you hope. God can restore any relationship. God can reach any heart. And I want you to trust in that and have faith.
Well, I would agree with that, Mandy, that God is a God of grace and not of condemnation, that there's no condemnation in those who are in Christ Jesus. He takes our shortcomings and makes a lot of good things come out of that. So I would echo that same encouragement to your listeners.
Amen. Thank you so much for being here, Jim. Loved having you.